Today's podcast sponsored by Snappy Style. All
right, here we go.
Let's rock and roll.
Offices of China Hall on a Friday afternoon. We are up here hanging out, and Josh and I invited a special guest today. I'm excited for this Q&A.
Yes.
Who do we got here good. With us?
Would you like me to introduce myself?
Yes.
Hey, I absolutely can. Well, I'm Wade Beavers, local resident here. I guess I have to give the quick background. I started a company about over eight years ago, I guess, a company called DoApp and a company called M-Remedy. Exited those, had a couple exits through that. Now I'm kind of busy with other investments, one of them being The Yard, which is a sports facility here in town. I'm invested in some other funds within the area, Great North Labs, which is a technology fund. We have about $40 million there in that fund that, you know, if tech companies want to come and pitch to us, we'll definitely look at. The other one is I'm into solar now. I haven't even told you guys this. Yeah, so I'm now an investor in a company called Blue Sky Solar, so I'm doing commercial solar installation. So I'm not getting on any roofs, so
yeah.
I'm not capable. My hands are not really talented in that foray, but so I got my hands in a bunch of different stuff.
So, that's great. That's awesome.
Before we got started, Josh was like, I know nothing about weight. I said, perfect. Just save it for the podcast. Yep, exactly. Then that way we can figure it out as we go.
Just ask me questions as I go. I'll just answer them. If I don't know the answer, I'll just make it up as I go.
Yeah.
Right? That's how it works.
So what, just quick on the DoApp. What was that? What is that?
So DoApp was a mobile technology company, but I'm going to backtrack. What happened was I was working at IBM. I was a designer there for quite a few years. And a colleague of mine, Joe Shriver, he and I were both designers. Joe left and went to Google. He was actually an early employee at Google in the first couple hundred. He was the first UI designer. Joe was pretty fortunate, moved back in 2006 to Minneapolis. And, you know, he'd call me during the day, and I'm working at IBM. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm working. And Joe wasn't working. He's like, hey, you know, I mean, I had the opportunity through Google, it kind of financially helped me a little bit. Let's start a company. And I'm like, okay. So, and I'd done a bunch of research around mobile. At that time, the Apple iPhone came out in 07. And I'm like, listen, I think this is really going to be the next move. Joe was big into widgets at the time. I don't know if people remember those terms, widgets. Things were like little mini web applications. He was big into that. And I'm like, that's not cool. Let's go after mobile. And so we started DoApp in the spring of 08. And we didn't know what we were going to do. We really didn't. We knew we were doing mobile, but we didn't know. We applied to the Apple App Store. We were fortunate. We were one of the first 1,500 companies that got in.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, don't tell me rhyme or reason why. It was luck. And then what happened was of those 1,500 companies, about 6 weeks before the App Store was going to open up, they said we're only taking 500 apps. So we thought we were really kind of SOL. Like, we ain't going to happen. Well, we landed three apps in the first 500, which was really, really cool. So,
and was this the first company you started?
Into? Like the first I can tell venture. You stories like people say, oh, I got an MBA. I got no MBA, man. My MBA is life.
Yeah.
And that really was the fundamental difference. And I always tell people like, hey, it's probably good to go get an MBA, but I'll tell you what, it will not prepare you to be in a startup. Mm-hmm. Not at all.
Did you keep your job at IBM while you
left? All in, baby.
That's
all
great.
In. Wow. All in. Big risk. I was 38 years old, three kids, right? You look at that. And really for me, comes down to a couple things. I mean, Joe and I are really close. It was a trust factor knowing that, you know, what we were going to do, we were kind of all in. I recruited another guy, David Barillo. David had been 19 years at IBM at that time, good friend of mine. Took away Tim Zolsel and a couple other guys from IBM. The thing about IBM is they have great talent there. It was just pulling them out of there and then getting their mindset of saying, okay, you're not in an enterprise company anymore. You're in a startup, which means you're doing everything, right? So that was a big challenge. I mean, it's almost like doing a lobotomy on somebody, you know, you have to gut change that. But here's the one thing about talent that comes from those areas. You know, Mayo Clinic's probably the same way. They understand enterprise. Right. So that was the deciding difference. What I saw is a lot of startups don't understand enterprise and enterprise don't understand startups. We bridged that gap. We bridged that gap pretty good. So, we had three of the first 500 apps. The apps were, you know, we had a My Light flashlight, a to-do application. I mean, they were really rudimentary, man. I mean, I could do a 5-hour podcast just on that world that I lived in. And then we did game apps. We did some really cutting edge stuff, like with the phone. We had something called Punchometer. You could actually use your phone as like a punch, and it would do an air punch, and it would actually indicate how much force you generated.
Oh, interesting.
Almost like, you know, the old carnival game where you hit the hammer and it goes up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that. And what would happen is then, this is pre-Facebook, it would send you a text message. You would open up that text message, and if you didn't have the app, it would ask you to download it. If you had the app, then you would counterfight me with it, and then we post scores out on the site. So we were doing some really cutting edge stuff.
Yeah.
But the problem is games and apps like that really are like being a country music singer in Nashville or being an actress or actor in Hollywood. Yep. It's hit and miss, right? You're going to get a hit, you're not going to get a hit. And so I really wanted to think differently. So that's when we really modified the company kind of in 2010 and went after creating more of a platform for vertical industries, you know, and did that. So, yeah.
And with those early apps, how did you find a way to monetize them early on and actually make some revenue to help fund the team?
We did and we didn't. You know, I mean, obviously Joe funded the company through his returns at Google. And that was a big risk. I mean, we didn't go out and take outside funding, but I can tell you, and you know, now the employees don't know, but we were down to the last penny, man. I mean, that's a hard part when you're, you know, let's say a year and a half, 2 years in, and you're like, well, we're probably one paycheck away from being done here, you know, and that's a pretty scary part. But what we ended up doing is really just kind of testing, you know. So we had some apps that were for sale, some were free. We figured out how to make money off of ads that way. But you got to have a huge amount of traffic to do that. So, you know, when we started, there was 500 apps. Well, within, you know, 2 years, there's a million.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's millions of apps. So competing was really different. We learned that there's a whole method of marketing your app. There's a whole different thing. And we just kind of played a different game at that point. And so really where we had our success was we started to create what I kind of call a reusable process. So I was able to make an app for WCCO, and I took that platform and all of our guys built it that I could make that KTTC, you know, Channel 6 here, whatever it was, you know what I mean? Those stations, in fact, Channel 6 is a client of ours. And so we suddenly could replicate that over and over, and then we built functionality to change the app on the back end without doing an app resubmission. And that was really kind of unique. There was nobody in the industry doing what we were doing. And you know, the funny thing is, like, I think about, you know, Tap Tap Revenge and all those other games that started when we started, all those companies are dead and gone, and we still exist.
Yeah.
So that's what's really interesting to see, is we stood the test of time. So over that, you know, we built a platform for the news industry, had a huge part of the news broadcasting industry and newspaper industry. We did the same thing for the real estate industry. So to credit to David Brilla, he went out and sold 15 of the top 20 markets in the United States. One guy. He was out doing it. So we suddenly had Chicago, San Fran, San Diego, these were all clients, because each MLS association has their own version of Zillow. We had all that market. And you guys know this well. I mean, you know, you do in commercial real estate, you know that.
Yep.
We built the market around that. And what we did is we charged those associations a fee. So we kind of flipped it on its head. It was not like, how do you make it for $1.99 or 99 cents? Because what I've learned is people, there's just a variance of what they were willing to pay. And the problem is iTunes music for 99 cents really neutered the software development industry, because everybody thought every app should be 99 cents.
Which is really cheap, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's Palm Pilot
apps.
That's
what I thought, too.
Yeah, there's Palm Pilot apps that were $19.99, and then suddenly now you're on the App Store, and people are complaining, why is it $3.99? You know, and I'm like, well, dude.
If it was over like a buck, I was like, nope, not buying that.
World changed. World totally changed. And I don't know if Apple knew exactly what they were doing from that. And, you know, now
there's no way they knew.
No.
They're like a bunch of guys and gals just like you were sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well,
wow.
Well, the funny thing is the first 500 apps were reviewed by Steve Jobs himself.
Wow. Really? That's really cool.
So you had a review from him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So all of us had a review.
Awesome. And the review was?
And the review. Well, we got approved, right? But one we didn't get approved was an app called Whoopee Cushion. And we got a note from them saying that bodily sounds were not universally acceptable. But I'm sure everybody has flatulence in every country, but hey, that's cool, you know? So it kind of got rejected. And then eventually through pressure, you know, it went through, but it went through with like 80 other apps. So by then you weren't the first adopter, yep. right? And that's when we learned a lesson that the most successful app was iFart. They spent about 600 grand in marketing. I know you laugh at the name, right? Yeah. 600 grand in marketing, they made about 1.5, 1.6 million. And, you know, they just
made
did
it in the ad, or I'm sorry, made it in the purchases of the app? Or
yes.
Made it, okay.
Yes. So their profit margin was about $1 million, you know? And what you realized is if you got in the top 50, getting in the top 25 or getting the top 10, that would tier you up to make a lot more money in each tier level,
yeah.
you know? So there was, it was fascinating to be part of kind of the Wild Wild West during that time. So, you know, so I spent 8 years doing that gig and it was a long time from 08 to 16. The one we did, we partnered with the Mayo Clinic called M Remedy. We exited that one in 2012. And that was kind of the same concept, but for hospitals. It was really cool. It had a suite of trackers. And think about this. This is like 2010 we started this. It had anxiety, depression tracker, migraine tracker, pregnancy tracker, blood pressure tracker, all built in. Our goal when we made it was to actually help doctors do a better job of communicating with their patients. What we found was the hospitals wanted it for more marketing purposes. So it was interesting and fascinating to see how the model kind of flowed. Like I said, we exited that in 12. Then 2014, we had an exit done on the real estate side. That real estate app solution, CoreLogic, a publicly trading company, acquired it from us. And then in 2016, News Cycle acquired our news thing. So yeah, so I've been through it a little bit, been through the mill a little bit.
During that time, you're doing a lot of work, I imagine, remotely, a lot of work just around the country, traveling to meet with different people.
Yep.
Did you feel somewhat disconnected from the Rochester community, your hometown, in the business that you were in?
Yeah, we didn't, you know, we didn't make a lot of revenue from this community, which is different, you know, although, you know, what we did make is we grabbed great talent out of this community. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would say that, like, right now, what was the secret sauce? It's like, there's top-notch people here, you know. The biggest challenge we probably have in Rochester is not a lot of entrepreneurship in building an infrastructure to draw businesses like that, you know. Business experience, doing exits. I mean, you know, I'm probably one of the few that have done a lot of exits, although there's a lot of other companies that have kind of, you know, been through some of those things. And there's some really legit companies in town. Like, people don't know about. Brokerman's one of them. Mm-hmm. I know people don't know they exist. Great company. Had a great conversation with Doug Westra one day about that. They're kind of expanding into Energy Bin and other stuff, which relates to my solar. And I was like, this dude gets it. So those are ones that are totally off the radar, but they make most of their money out of town, I suspect.
Right.
So to me, I don't know if there's been a great job of, you know, collecting a lot of that. But I don't think Rochester's any different than what I've seen in other communities. We're just smaller. We're getting there. We're a little bit behind. We're probably a little more conservative on that, but I'm seeing that change. So I'm pretty optimistic. You know, I put my roots here. I'm sticking around here. So, yeah. And I try to do my best to facilitate that. So I meet with a lot of people who have ideas, concepts, or just want guidance, you know, which is really important. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a good opportunity here.
One thing that comes to mind for me is now, as you have exited few of those tech companies, you've shifted to a more local business.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this.
I'll
tell everybody in Rochester, listen, when we opened this, because I have some partners.
What is
town,
it first?
You know, the yard training basically is a facility. I'll explain this quickly. Is a facility that's got synthetic ice for kids to go shoot hockey pucks, you know, get good at hockey. We've got a workout area. We're adding some Peloton stuff. People can exercise there. And then we have a bunch of batting cages and tunnels for, you know, improving, you know, yourself in either, you know, lacrosse, we can even take two, but baseball and softball primarily. Why did I do those? Both my kids, all three of my kids actually either played softball, baseball, or hockey. So there's a sports family, right? And I looked around and said, there just wasn't much of that opportunity here. There's a lot of great businesses that offer things, you know, now quasi similar. There's also, you know, the Mayo Clinic does a great job, OMC on the training type stuff, but there's just not a place. And so we don't want to be the rack. We don't want to be those things. We're a little bit different. You know, I just tell people, come and visit. You'll like it. You know, and we're using technology to advance it, which is much different. I mean, we're using cutting edge stuff that the big leaguers are using, stuff that colleges are using. Like, our pitching machines are exactly what the University of Minnesota softball and baseball have. Our Rapsodo system, which analyzes spin rate, is the same thing major league teams are using. Our hit track system are what professional and college teams are using. I mean, we're trying to utilize that stuff because this is the generation these kids live in. So we're excited about that. But I'll tell you this. When we did it, our partners, Andrew Davick, who's an attorney in town, Matt Murphy, who owns Kathy's bar, you know, kind of joke, we all come from diverse backgrounds, but we all had kids that go through the systems. What we realized was we know we're not going to make money off this. We recognize that. Now, we don't want to bleed to death on it, but the reality is that's why I did it as a local thing, because there could be something there, you know, bigger, but it's really needed in the community. Because mm-hmm. what I see right now, there's a ton of people driving up to the Twin Cities paying four times the amount to go utilize the same services that we just built here. And we spent a big chunk of money. Boys, I mean, I'm telling you, it was a big...
That equipment can't be cheap.
No, it was a big nut. And like, people don't realize, like, hey, it costs a lot to run that.
Yeah.
And so we just really felt like it was a good thing. I mean, if I had my druthers, I probably would have had more space and put in little small basketball courts, because I know that that's a need here. So really our goal is to try to fill a void there. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm making my living on other stuff. I'm still active in News Cycle as president of mobile. I've invested in the solar stuff. I've invested with a lot of other different things. This is kind of my passion. But it is back. You're right, Bucky. This is for Rochester. That's like, I did this. Yeah. I did this specifically for this town, you know. And my kids are, I mean, my older son, Caleb, my daughter's already out of college. My oldest son, Caleb's a sophomore. He's going to be done soon enough. And Carson's a seventh grader. He's done soon enough. But that's not the legacy we wanted to live. Really, our legacy is wanting to do this for the community. And what's really cool, we're really inclusive. It's not baseball only. It's softball. Girls softball is a growing thing. And really what hit me when we were getting ready to start this was my niece plays down in Decorah, Iowa, Cresco, Iowa. She came up to a tournament up here, and it was a 40-team tournament. And it's in the fall, and it's like freezing cold. It's like 30-something degrees. Kids are like, when they swing the bat and they hit it, you could tell their like hands break. They don't want to be there, these girls. And the parents don't want to be there, right? But I thought, this is pretty amazing. This cold of a day, and you got 40 teams out here wanting to play, 48 teams. I'm like, this makes sense. Like, we're doing this right. So we've got tons of softball girls coming in. That's a sport that's really been neglected, you know, outside, you know, some people that run some teams in the surrounding area. And, the, you know, RYFSA, I think, is a group, does a pretty good job. The Mackens, husband and wife, they've done a fantastic job of really growing that sport. I really want baseball, softball to grow here more mm-hmm. and more. You know, I grew up in warm climate of California. Didn't have to worry about it. I could play baseball year-round. Here, it's pretty tough. But the stuff you've seen us use with that hit tracks and everything, you can play games and leagues right there.
That is awesome.
Inside.
That was so cool.
I don't know the exact story of it, but Austin Hormel, the Hormel family was very passionate about baseball, and they had brought talent to Austin, Minnesota.
Oh yeah, they got a great baseball facility there. Good baseball talent there for sure.
And so it can exist anywhere. Mm-hmm. And now with the technology, especially, it's amazing what these kids can learn from. And I don't know if it's the best way to put it, but from the computer, that as I was going through the baseball program, we didn't have that technology.
No.
It's amazing what you can learn and how you can get better.
No, you can have you can have conversations. I mean, the other day, you know, they had the Rochester Sports Commission had the big event where Justin Morneau spoke. And I got a chance to sit at the table with Corey Koski and Michael Rustovich. You know, Michael, former Rochester guy. And, you know, I mean, those guys were talking about, like, the technology that's gotten and the resources that kids have today is much different than what they had, you know. And so, you know, our goal isn't like, hey, if the next kid comes out of our program, you know, and comes and trains there and he becomes a great athlete, awesome. But that isn't the focus. Like I'm just telling you, I've coached for 28 years. I got a passion about this. And it's like, it's talking about life, changing life, making it a place where kids want to be. Engagement that way is more important to me. And I see kids from all walks coming in, and that's the best part, man. We'll work with anybody. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the cool part. Hmm. So
how often are you over there? And like, are you doing some of the training too?
I am. I mean, I'm certified in the National Pitching Association. I went through that quite a few years back. I haven't renewed my stuff that I need to do, and it's kind of changed, but I've been coaching for many, many years. So so I'm there. I'm there actively with kids because I enjoy it. Yep. You know, besides, my kids don't want to hear from me, so I can actually go train other kids. So, you know, I've been active in the youth baseball program as far as coaching, coached the travel team the last, I don't know, umpteen years, it seems like. So I know a lot of the kids. So now you know you guys came to visit and you saw me working with some kids on hitting and stuff. So I mean, I got a good baseball knowledge. I get that, and the thing is baseball's changed and softball's changed because science and technology has now proven things that we taught years ago were completely wrong. Yep. That's the amazing part is, I mean, we have hitters in major leagues who were successful, Hall of Fame hitters, and they'll sit and indicate and say, well, no, you swing down on the ball. Well, that's not true. We've now proven science it's actually more of an upswing. So your launch angle is much different than you think. You know, you may think you're swinging down, but you're not, right? So now we have this proof to be able to actually get the kids, fix flaws early on. And I think that's the fun part. And once they see the success, which is really cool, I have a young gentleman there, a young kid who's a middle schooler from Mayo. And he's coming in there and doing the work. And I made some modifications to him. You could tell he was really frustrated. But man, he's raking it. Mm-hmm. He's really hammering the ball. And he's excited. You know, when you guys were there, you saw it. You know, Mayo kid hit. And it was great. We got kids from all the schools, which is fantastic. So we've been really, really inclusive that way. And now we're really trying to push the surrounding area. Because the other thing is, you know, softball and baseball is healthy in these smaller communities. You go to a Stewartville, Casson, Byron, you know, all those towns in this area, Chatfield, others, they're healthy. I mean, I think that Barron's kid was from Plainville Village in Millville. I mean, that's awesome to see. So
how are you getting the people in and stuff like that? Because you opened right after Black Friday,
we did. We kind of opened and really word of mouth. Okay. You know, we've got some slated things, some good marketing stuff coming up. We really wanted to make sure to kind of grow this organically. And it's really the long haul. It's not the short term. You know, this isn't about trying to just jam a bunch of people in a facility. Right away, we kind of knew this. Yep. And we've got long-term plans. Like some exciting things I announced today, the Minnesota Twins are coming down to do a coaching clinic on the 23rd of February. It's completely free to anybody. If you're a parent and you potentially want to coach or you're a current coach, you're going to learn something. Mm-hmm. That's really the key. So we've started to do a lot of social marketing. We're doing some traditional stuff. We've signed some packages around some deals around sports athletics. But the reality is what we've learned too is come in and visit and, you know, they don't leave.
Yeah, once they can come in,
I mean, once you
see the facility, see what you're doing, the equipment. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, when we went in, it was like, whoa, this is really cool.
Yeah, unimaginable, right? Yeah. We really have gotten to the point where, you know, we're excited about what we're delivering, mm-hmm. And we're just getting more and more kids to be there. I mean, the funny thing is we have smash ball there, right? And like we have that in the corner. Well, that's hand-eye coordination, so we're having kids go through some of that. So some of it's engagement that way. Really want to teach kind of atmosphere. We're getting really, really busy now because you got teams, you know, coming in, starting to want to do some things. And we'll have more and more training. We've got some personal trainers that come from the Twin Cities. We've got some from in town. We're getting more and more. We're really excited for some of those guys because really what our model's unique that we can let them train in our facility with people. And we don't even charge those guys for that. If they're members, you know, they could obtain the additional dollars, which is very, very different than models what we've seen. So we're going to turn it on its head. I think people are going to be really surprised that we're challenging the status quo of the way those things will be. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But we've got all kinds of other stuff that we're going to do. We got some pretty exciting announcements. Got some new partners that may be coming in that will really turn some heads, which is pretty exciting. Can't talk too much about it yet, but it's good. Yeah.
So as you look to the future of Rochester and kind of the business community, whether it's a specific business or it's just what you're seeing the community turn into, what are some things you're excited about related to Rochester and what's happening?
Well, to even taking it back to the yard, a great example is sometimes we have this terrible dilemma in Rochester to almost act as a bedroom community to the Twin Cities. And what I mean is the facility that we opened, they have tons of them in the Twin Cities, tons of them. So we need one here because I know too many families that are driving up to the Twin Cities and I'm like, that's a lot of windshield time. You know, and I was one of them. So my younger one played for a club team up in the cities, and you know we were going up there 3 days a week to train. And I'm like, this is insane, man! Yeah. I'm driving all the way up there 3 days a week, and it's a great program. But I'm like, why couldn't we do some sort of satellite thing here? So you know, I started talking to them a little bit, and just realized it needs to be. We need to start to grow that aspect. And make sure that there's opportunities. And I think one of the bigger things is obviously real estate's always a challenge, right, for people trying to do things here. The cost of that. But I think, you know, that can change. And I think you have to be realistic about where you're located. I mean, we're located in an area that I think will rekindle. It's on that frontage road on 7th Street. So if anyone wants to come in, it's 2443 7th Street, Northwest. No, I'm kidding. Plug. The reality is that's a whole area that's kind of commercial stuff, and it was the old Tana building. You know, it's the Tile Superstore building, and Tana was in there. I think they built one down. But that area is like untapped because, you know, I think Little Thistle's right behind us a block. Yeah. I think that area is really going to be popular, and that kind of goes towards that West Circle Drive, all the other stuff. So I'm excited to see some things, and I'm doing a lot more investigating of companies. You know, I was looking at storage units here. And I met with a guy on how we could use technology for storage units. I have no idea how many. I'm giving everybody like a free tip if you want to go look into this. But I was looking at whether there's good control climate storage here. And what does that do? And doing it differently, automating that process, right? I think that's an opportunity that can grow.
What do you mean automating it?
So basically, you know, today, you know, the way you have it, it's the old keypad, you know, keypad in, the other stuff. Basically, and that requires two or three people maybe managing it, sometimes one. Storage units actually need to be smaller now. What they're finding is, you know, they sell you a 10 by 20. Really, you need a 5 by 5.
Oh.
People don't need as much. So having more different variety options, being able to actually rent it without even talking to anybody, real time, online, do it. You can rent it per day, per week, you know, whatever you need to do from that perspective. So I'm looking around. I met with some pretty renowned people that have done it across the United States, and I'm amazed at some of the technology they're implementing.
I just saw following the CRE tech kind of industry, and I can't remember the name of the website, but what they're trying to do is set up, we'll call it the Airbnb of storage, meaning you got extra storage. We have extra storage in this basement of this building.
That's genius.
Been unutilized for years and years and years, lots of square footage. And like, how do you make that available so the inventory is transparent so people can actually come in and
it's genius. That's space. Genius because that area needs to be there as long as you can retrofit it, you know, because the reality is everybody wants to maximize every cubic feet they have, you know, every cubic foot that they want. And I think that makes sense. You know, if you're renting traditional rentals for offices and other stuff, you may have it. I mean, it's no different than the airline industry. Think about it. They got to have a body in that seat. And if they don't, they have a certain amount of weight, they're going to take extra packages. They're going to do whatever, right? And it's really maximizing that efficiency. Of course, you know, technology and data analytics has helped you with that, you know. And I think that's what I see more and more as people will create new opportunities. So this is a great town to run a business, you know. I mean, you know, it's got its own share of issues, but I think that's changing, you know. I think a lot of new leadership recognizes that. I mean, one of the best restaurants in town I've gone to is Cameo. It just opened. Those guys are great. I mean, I know Zach and what he's trying to do. And then I think Fiddlehead, you know, is that what's called Fiddlehead Coffee? Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you know, the guys at Cameo, I mean, I'm hooked, man. They're wings. If you guys haven't tried them, it's a free plug.
Smash Dirty Bird. Go in there.
Go to get the Dirty Bird wings and you will never go back. Like, you keep going back every time because it's that good. Well, they're that good, boys.
We'll get there. One thing I think of, and just in what you had shared, is like opportunity related to Rochester, is we have enough mass as far as people and pull to this community.
Yep.
That when you set up a business, there's going to be customers. And I think that the customer opportunity is high as long as you market correctly, run a good business, treat your customers well.
Service-based, man. I'm telling you, that is the difference. Like, you go in and people expect a good experience. I mean, in anything you do, and that's where I think people need to realize, like, that can be a huge differentiator. You know, you don't have to be a franchise necessarily. You know, you can get people in and get them in over and over again. If you do a good service, they'll come back. You know, that's what we do something really unique at the yard. You notice when I came in, like those kids were working with other kids. All of our employees are required to do that. We don't sit around.
Yeah.
Why? I don't care if the place even looks dirty. I would rather that be more important, that you're working with a player. Because we have a lot of moms that'll bring their son, daughter in, and then we work with them right away. Mm. Like, that's a service side. So I know they're happy. I mean, I have some lady comes in, she starts to read. She just sits down and reads a book while her kid's doing the work. I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah. She doesn't feel like she has to be there, you know. Some dads want to, which is cool, but we provide that, dad or mom. But it's service-based. And we're in a town that is growing, right, and is going through those changes, I think the difference is you're going to see more and more independent businesses versus the big employers, right? So Mayo Clinic's here. It's going to be a big employer at all times, right? Which is great. It's good for the healthiness of the community. But, you know, I worked at IBM, and IBM in its heyday, I think, was like 10,000. Well, it ain't even close now. So where are those people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and to their credit, some of them I know have started their own businesses. Some have moved on. Some have moved to the cities or commute to the cities, which is, you know, a bummer. But I think people are being much more innovative. And some of that is because it's a little easier with technology to start a company and compete. That's changed, mm-hmm. right? I mean,
social media 101. I mean, yeah. That's what we live and breathe is like you put the marketing out there online in a community of this size. It gets noticed if you put in the legwork quickly because there's not a lot of other competition doing it. And the big guys don't understand the boots on the ground and what that creates for business opportunity.
Oh, locally. The power and service and responsiveness is pretty amazing. In fact, when we had the first 5 years of DoApp, we never had an office. We were running from basement. We were like the garage. Yeah, we were the garage, right? And then coffee shops, right?
You needed the China Hall.
Yep, we did. So then we started to look for a place. It's interesting. I called a couple brokers, and here's the funny thing is, and you know this personally, you called me back. So I rented from you. I rented from you, but you know, I called three other people before you. They never called me back. You called me back right away. Dude, there lies the difference. And you called in less than a minute. Okay. Now, you might have been busy or whatever, but you didn't. The other guys, literally, it was like 2 or 3 weeks later. I'm like, hello. I left you a message basically saying, I want to rent a place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's my money. That's how easy it was. I was
We're ready to go.
And so I always look and go, you know what? Service is a big part of it. You know, that service and experience, you know, and it got down to the little things. I mean, the things that we utilized in our apps and made a differentiator in what we did in our apps was this great user experience stuff. We do the same thing in what I'm trying to develop and everything I do in the businesses that I've kind of invested in, you know, which makes sense. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well, thank you for your time today, Wade.
Thank you.
This has been awesome. If people are looking for yourself online, where can they find you? And then also, where can they find the yard? Share a little bit about
You know, I think, you know, the typical stuff. Look me up, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter.
I was impressed by your Instagram game. You're actually putting some stuff out on Instagram.
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm an old schoolie, but, you know, my kids always tell me, oh, Dad, Facebook's for old guys like you, and Instagram's cool, you know. And the funny thing is that my wife will send me, like, a Snapchat every once in a while. Be like, oh, I sent you a snap. I'm like, when? She's like, 2 weeks ago. So I can't keep track of all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, directly, I have no problem. Just don't spam me. Wade at Wade Beavers. That's easy enough. I know it sounds like the reason I always had my domain name, it was easy. I always thought, well, then I can have it and I'll never forget my email address. So, you know, it's easy.
It is. Yeah.
So people always look at me like, how'd you get that? I was like, well, it's pretty easy to do, you know? So that way. But yeah, if they want to do that, they surely can. And, you know, like I said, any aspiring entrepreneurs that want to do stuff, I have no problem. I meet with a lot of people, coffee. Just had one yesterday with a hugely intelligent, extremely intelligent gentleman who's in the med space and fascinating, you know, just giving him good guidance. So.
Sweet. Yeah. And then the yard, where can they find that online? And then also tell a little bit about the membership structure, because I think some people are interested.
We kind of flipped the model a little bit differently. So it's yardtraining.com. They can sign up online. The way we kind of got started and really thought the model we needed to do to get started is really a membership model. It's like $85 a month per person. I think it's $125 for a family, unlimited usage. Works pretty good. What we've really seen is it's grown dramatically, partly different than what we've seen is a lot of these training services in the cities will charge you $1,500 for, you know, 12 sessions. And what we realized is that a la carte thing just doesn't really work. So we're going to have just a base membership fee. It's worked out really, really good. And then we've got some custom trainers that want to charge on a per hour basis to do one-on-one training. They can. And we've got some team rates now that we're getting ready to kind of announce and do. But yeah, it's inexpensive, man. Mom and dads, I've seen them come and work out while their kids are exercising.
Oh, cool.
You know, hitting. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
And it's a business that's just going to continually develop as far as the model and the equipment. And
totally.
It's ever-changing, I think.
Yeah, we got new stuff. Right now, they're fixing the wall. We had a big hole in the wall. you know, somebody threw one of the training med balls through. So they're fixing that today. And we've got all kinds of new equipment. We got the TRX systems, all kinds of cross-training. The other cool part is we partnered with Active PT. So active PT guarantees that they'll see any one of our athletes if they're injured within 24 hours.
Wow.
That's really cool. And they're going to come do some preventative injury stuff. Talk to Dan, the throwing expert over at the Mayo, and we're talking about doing some stuff there. So we're excited. We really want to be collaborative with everybody. So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Bucky Beeman over at the offices of China Hall and Realty Growth. If you have anybody looking for an office, let us know. We got space available. What you got, Josh?
And I'm Josh Langmaid. I started MediaCore here in town, video production and social media marketing.
Thank you, Wade. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
See ya.